The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles initially from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter and then from the Harvard Women's Health Watch. This is the Mayo Clinic special report from November 2023, and I'm concluding a discussion of hypertension. The next thing I'm going to read is called Expert Perspective, and it's a series of questions for Dr. Gary Schwartz, who is a hypertension expert at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. The first question is, what do you wish people knew about hypertension? Many people don't understand the term hypertension. They confuse it with body tension and the idea that they are hyper. Everyone has stressors, which can certainly contribute to elevated blood pressure. But blood pressure isn't the same as the pressure you feel when you're under stress. It has to do with the pressure against the artery wall when your heart beats. Why is high blood pressure referred to as the silent killer? Dr. Schwartz responds, people can feel very normal until their high blood pressure becomes very high. Along the way, it silently damages blood vessels throughout the body, especially the brain, eyes, kidney, and heart. The first symptoms relate to damage in these organs. That could be chest pain and a heart attack. It could be a minor stroke where you suddenly get weaker, feel numbness in an arm or leg, or are unable to speak. Maybe you start retaining fluid in your legs because your kidneys are starting to fail. Why is early treatment so important? The earlier we identify and treat high blood pressure, the better someone's health outcome. On top of that, we know that untreated high blood pressure tends to increase over time. The longer we wait to treat it, the more medication it takes to bring someone's blood pressure under control. If you're not sodium sensitive, do you still need to reduce sodium? It's true that people's bodies react to sodium differently. In some people, sodium quickly leads to high blood pressure, whereas other people can consume it in varying amounts, with little or no effect. The problem is that kidney function declines as people age. Because the kidneys remove excess salt, sodium sensitivity increases with age. On top of that, most medicines work more effectively when someone is on a low-sodium diet. For those reasons, we generally recommend that people with high blood pressure follow a low-salt diet, no matter whether they are sensitive to sodium or not. Does everyone with high blood pressure need drug therapy? No, says Dr. Schwartz. It depends on blood pressure readings and risk factors. If a person's blood pressure is very high, with systolic pressures of 140 or greater, and diastolic pressure of 90 or greater, we use drug therapy along with lifestyle changes to try to bring it down. If a person's blood pressure is lower than that, we use an equation to determine the risk of having a cardiovascular event like a heart attack. We recommend lifestyle changes and prescription medication if the risk is 10% or greater over the next 10 years. On the other hand, if someone's risk of cardiovascular events is less than 10%, we encourage lifestyle change but might continue to monitor the condition over time. Dr. Schwartz, why do people resist taking prescription medications? For many people, it's the fear of side effects like fatigue or sexual dysfunction. It's important for people to know that we now have very effective medications with very few side effects. Most people won't feel any side effects at all. If someone does experience a side effect, we work to manage the type of drug and the dose until we find a way to manage their blood pressure with minimal downsides. If someone doesn't want to try drug therapy, I often suggest we wait 3 to 6 months to give lifestyle changes a chance to work. For some people with many lifestyle risk factors like obesity, a high salt diet, and being sedentary, lifestyle changes can make a big difference. But if the blood pressure remains elevated after 3 to 6 months, I encourage drug therapy. I point out that they can still make more lifestyle changes. If they are successful, we may be able to reduce their dose or even stop their medications. Dr. Schwartz, there's been an explosion of at-home monitoring devices, including blood pressure cuffs. Do you see this as a positive development? Yes, we encourage people to measure their blood pressure at home. Quite often, when people monitor their blood pressure, they can observe the effect of their intervention on their blood pressure directly. This knowledge helps them to continue with therapy. On top of that, those at-home readings tend to be more accurate than the ones we take in the office. For some people, their blood pressure is much lower in their daily lives than what we measure at the office. If we prescribe medications based only on the in-office readings, we'd overtreat them. Other people experience a blood pressure drop in the medical setting. When they come into the office, their readings look good, but outside the office, their blood pressure is high. Without at-home monitoring, we would undertreat that group of people. What about supplements for high blood pressure? Herbs and dietary supplements continue to be extremely popular, but often they lack sufficient research to evaluate their safety and how well they work. Even the ones with some scientific support tend to offer relatively minor blood pressure lowering effects. Sometimes supplements become a procrastinating process. For most people, prescription medication and other lifestyle changes are needed to bring their pressure under control. If you're considering a supplement, the ones that I'm going to tell you about show the most promise of providing a small potential blood pressure benefit. The first is omega-3 fatty acids. Many studies show that omega-3 fatty acids may help to reduce blood pressure. Effects are small and mixed. Then there's garlic. Evidence suggests that garlic may reduce blood pressure slightly. Green tea. A few studies indicate that it has a small effect on lowering blood pressure. Finally, magnesium and potassium. Some, but not all, clinical trials have demonstrated a positive effect with magnesium, although more research is needed. You can live a long and healthy life even if you're diagnosed with high blood pressure. But to do so, it's important to recognize that high blood pressure is a serious condition. It takes a team effort to treat high blood pressure and bring it under control. You can't do it alone, and you can't depend on your healthcare team to do it for you. Everyone working together and supporting you, including family and friends, can help you to achieve your goals. Now let's take a moment to look at the Harvard Women's Health Watch. This is the November 2023 issue. Let's start with the last part, which is a series of short articles. The first article says, "Hearing aids may reduce cognitive decline." Hearing loss can contribute to cognitive decline and may increase the risk of dementia. But seeing an audiologist and regularly using hearing aids was linked to slower cognitive decline in people already at high risk of developing cognitive impairment. This analysis, published online by The Lancet, involved 1,000 people aged 70 to 84. All had hearing loss, but some were also participating in a long-term study of cardiovascular health and were deemed at high risk of developing memory and thinking problems. Participants were randomly split into two groups. Half received counseling on preventing chronic disease, while the other got hearing aids and treatment for hearing loss from an audiologist. Researchers tracked the group for 3 years, rating their cognitive abilities. Hearing aids didn't appear to affect cognitive decline in the total group, but they did appear to slow cognitive decline in study participants who were already at the highest risk of worsening cognitive impairment. The results drive home that remedying hearing loss might stem that risk. A next rather alarming short article is that alcohol-related deaths are rising faster among women. Alcohol-related deaths in the United States are rising faster among women than men, a new analysis suggested. For the study, published in the July 2023 issue of JAMA Network Open, researchers evaluated CDC data tracking underlying cause of death from 1999 to 2020. In that period, 606,000 Americans died of alcohol-related causes, which include alcohol poisoning, liver disease, and heart problems. The researchers found that while men still die of alcohol-related problems in far greater numbers than women, death among women are growing at a faster rate. Between 2018 and 2020, alcohol-related death rate among men increased by 12.5% per year. For women, the annual average increased 15%. Several biological factors make women more susceptible to alcohol effects. For example, women have lower levels of enzymes that metabolize alcohol, which means it takes our bodies longer to break down alcohol before it can damage organs. Women's bodies also have a lower proportion of water than men's do, allowing alcohol to become more concentrated. Finally, a short article entitled Cannabis Use Disorder Can Raise Surgical Risk. Regular cannabis users may have higher risks of experiencing complication before, during, and after surgery. For the study, published online July 5, 2023 by JAMA Surgery, researchers analyzed 62,000 hospitalizations among adults for major elective surgery in the United States from 2016 to 2019. A group of 6,211 surgical patients with cannabis use disorder, defined as continued cannabis use despite health or social problems, was compared with the same number of patients without the disorder. The researchers found that patients with cannabis use disorder were about 20% more likely to experience a significant complication around the time of surgery, like a heart attack, acute kidney injury, stroke, breathing difficulties, blood clots, and hospital-acquired infections. Cannabis use is increasingly perceived as harmless as it became legal in more U.S. states, but about 3 in 10 users develop cannabis use disorder. Patients should routinely be screened for this problem before surgery to help avert preventable complications. Now, continuing with the Harvard Women's Health Watch, let's look at an article that's entitled Debunking Common Wellness Myths. Some tried and true wellness guidelines we can spot a mile away. Get enough sleep. Move your body regularly. Eat plenty of fruits and vegetables. But social media now pummels us with so-called health advice at such a rapid pace, it can be difficult to know what to believe and what to ignore. Much of it is of dubious value. But the reason this counsel is confusing is that many wellness myths contain a grain of truth, says Dr. Leonor Fernandez, a primary care doctor at Harvard-affiliated Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. There's some good information out there, she says, but the general problem with the internet is that it's sometimes hard to distinguish what's reliable from what's being spread for commercial, political, or other purposes. People can also be vulnerable to questionable advice because they're hungry for a quick fix, even when that's rarely possible. We're often looking for a one-pill type of solution, that one thing we can do to take care of a problem or simplify our lives to feel effective. But most things in health, the solution lies in the balance between what you do and what you eat rather than one specific thing, says Dr. Fernandez. Dr. Fernandez dissects three common wellness myths. The first is thin is synonymous with healthy. Truthfully, it's not that simple. There's certainly not just one healthy body type, and I've seen many people with a low body weight who aren't healthy. Indeed, carrying extra weight is associated with higher risk of many health problems, including heart disease, diabetes, and some forms of cancer. So it's not really realistic to say that our weight has no impact on our health. But it's a distortion to think that body mass index alone gives us a good indicator of our current health. Stay physically and mentally active regardless of your size. What matters most, perhaps, is how much we move and how connected and engaged we are. Being sedentary is definitely a negative for our health, and being heavier is sometimes associated with being sedentary. Myth: detoxes and cleanses make you healthier. Dr. Fernandez says, your body doesn't need them, and they may do more harm than good. Maybe your sister swears that detoxes or cleanses help her feel and look better by removing toxins and jump-starting weight loss. But these tactics won't help you and may harm you, according to the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health. These approaches often involve short-term diets and periods of fasting, and they may call for teas or juices, nutritional shakes, or special supplements or herbs. Detoxes, in particular, are marketed on the premise that they help the liver reset and work more efficiently to remove toxins we're exposed to in food and the environment. But these products haven't been proven to offer any health benefit and can be dangerous for older adults, women who are pregnant or breastfeeding, and some people with underlying health conditions, according to the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health. They can lead to an excessive intake of vitamins and minerals, kidney problems from drinking juices of high oxalate foods like spinach and beets, and bacterial infections from unpasteurized products. Moreover, we naturally get rid of toxins through our breath, our sweat, our urine, and our feces. Dr. Fernandez suggests to just eat a balanced, highly plant-based diet with fewer processed foods, and that's going to be better for you than any particular cleanse or detox. Finally, there is a myth that eating before bedtime leads to weight gain. And Dr. Fernandez says, timing doesn't count as much as what's on your plate. Popular wisdom posits that our metabolism slows at night, automatically converting any evening snack into fat. But chips or ice cream somehow tend to trump an apple while we're watching TV. It's no wonder we feel sluggish and doughy in the morning. There may be some truth that our metabolism and insulin secretion change at night because we're sleeping, but I suspect what you eat and whether you're eating is mindful matter more. Incorporate more protein, fiber, and complex carbohydrates into dinner choices to keep you feeling full through the evening. If you still feel compelled to snack, keep healthy options available when the urge arises, like Greek yogurt and berries, or carrots dipped in hummus. Now here's an article of interest. It's entitled, New Help for Hot Flashes. A daily pill joins a variety of non-hormonal options to treat menopause's highly disruptive hallmark symptom. Do you have your private summers? In generations past, women knew exactly what this question alluded to: menopausal hot flashes and night sweats. Far more awful than their alluring private summers nickname would suggest. But there's nothing singular about this phenomenon, known medically as vasomotor symptoms. Hot flashes and their nighttime iteration night sweats affect 80% of women and last an average of 7 to 9 years. For a third, these bursts of intense warmth, sweating, and flushing last more than a decade, according to the Menopause Society. Hot flashes are also the symptom women in the menopause transition most often talk about and seek treatment for. That's why they're hailing a new non-hormonal medication designed specifically for hot flash relief. Hot flashes are certainly in the top five symptoms women bring up in my office daily, says Dr. Tara Iyer, who heads the Menopause and Midlife Clinic at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. I see the entire spectrum, ranging from mild all the way to women who are debilitated by hot flashes and can't get anything done. Some even consider quitting their jobs and going on disability. Indeed, the workplace toll of vasomotor symptoms only adds to the drag on sleep, mood, and thinking skills. Menopause symptoms cost American women $1.8 billion each year in lost work time. Getting hot flashes in the middle of an important task can really throw off a woman's concentration, Dr. Iyer says. The first of its kind daily pill, Fezolinetant, or Veoza, that's V-E-O-Z-A-H, was approved by the FDA May 2023 for moderate to severe vasomotor symptoms for menopause. It works by targeting KNDY, which is called KNDY neurons, which regulates body temperature in the brain's hypothalamus. Fezolinetant, or Veoza, blocks these nerve cells when dipped in estrogen and causes them to behave erratically, triggering hot flashes. I'm going to say that again. Fezolinetant blocks these nerve cells when dips in estrogen cause them to behave erratically, triggering hot flashes. The pill performed well in clinical trials, reducing vasomotor symptoms by 60%. The reason this feels like such a game changer, says Dr. Jan Shifton, and it's so exciting from a scientific standpoint, is that up to now we had this universal phenomenon going on for millennia, but we still didn't know why it happened. This drug was developed because we finally figured out the basic biology of hot flashes. Like nearly every drug, Veoza or Fezolinetant comes with a few caveats. It may cause mild side effects like belly pain, diarrhea, or insomnia. Women who take it need to have blood tests to check for liver damage before they start. The tests are then repeated 3 more times at 3-month intervals. Fezolinetant is also costly. It can cost $550 for a month's supply. Since it's new, insurance coverage may vary. But the medication still represents great progress, Dr. Iyer said. Frankly, we don't have enough non-hormonal options for hot flashes, and it's an area in which we've been failing women for a long time. Hormone therapy is still considered the gold standard for treating vasomotor symptoms, since it replenishes diminished estrogen levels and can help control other menopause symptoms. Hormone therapy is safe for healthy women under 60 who are within 10 years of their final menstrual period. But some women can't take estrogen or don't want to. Those who shouldn't include women who've had breast cancer or certain other cancers, blood clots, heart attack, or stroke, unexplained vaginal bleeding, or liver disease. For women who choose not to take hormones, have not done well on them in the past, or can't because of medical reason, this new drug is very exciting, Dr. Iyer says. The more tools we have in our toolbox, the better. Veozah joins a variety of other non-hormonal medications that have long been prescribed for hot flashes. But there is a key difference. Veozah is designed specifically for this use, while the rest are primarily meant to treat other conditions and prescribed off-label to lessen hot flashes. In June 2023, the Menopause Society updated its recommendations. It also recommended, beside Veozah, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. These antidepressants, especially Paxil, have been a mainstay of treatment for women who opt not to take hormone therapy. They may be effective in reducing hot flashes, but might cause weight gain or sexual dysfunction. Another drug that's prescribed is oxybutynin or oxytrol, and also gabapentin or Neurontin. Neurontin can sometimes cause sleepiness, which is a real benefit for women who have insomnia. If you're interested in non-hormonal hot flash relief, Harvard experts say that you should be bold and tell your doctor about your problems. Really, you should be the one to decide if your symptoms are bothersome. The doctor can't decide for you, Dr. Schifrin says. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.